Now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to know. Here's your host, Congressional Attorney Mark Levine.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It seems now like it's been months since the Democratic National Convention, but it really was just about 10 days ago. It just happened the week before last, but so much has gone on since then. So many charges back and forth. Sarah Palin for good or for ill. And we'll talk about her later on in the broadcast. But apparently all that news has wiped out some of the memories of what just happened a week before. And I'm very sorry for America having such short memories. I'm extremely sorry, in fact, that there is a convention that the party out of power has to go first. It seems to me there's a huge advantage to going second in the convention swing, and Republicans pick up on that every single year. In the latter half of the show, I'm going to have Mike Lane on. He is a Republican strategist. I have a lot of things to say about the Republicans and how they're running their convention, how they're running their campaign. It's quite critical. You'll want to stick around for that. But before we get to that, because I want to make sure that what happened in Denver 10 days ago, the magical moment at Mile High Stadium that I was there for, that my guest sitting next to me was there for, I want to make sure it's not forgotten. So I want to talk about that with Shannon Sullivan. Now, Shannon Sullivan is an official delegate to the Democratic National Convention from the state of Virginia. She's the strategic affairs representative for the United Food and Commercial Workers. Shannon, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks so much.
So let's talk about Denver. Let's put aside the last week or so. We're going to get to that. Breathe in, breathe deep.
Negativity out.
Negativity out, positivity in, McCain out, Obama in. Now, tell me what you thought of the Democratic National Conventions. What were the best moments in your view?
Well, first of all, this was my first convention, so I didn't know what to expect. I thought, as far as the showmanship of the actual convention, it was top-notch. It was beautifully presented, and I thought the flow, you know, Democrats aren't always accused of running the most, you know, streamlined and efficient production. It was beautiful. You know, one thing led into the next, and as far as the backdrop, you know,
yeah, they really get their time codes. As a member of the press, of course, I was there too, and I do remember past conventions where you
absolutely
have them speaking late into the night and all at the wrong times. Barack Obama runs an efficient campaign. He runs an efficient convention.
He had the right music, the little interludes. You know, it was kind of like a baseball, you know, the big jumbotrons flashing to people, you know, dancing in the audience. But there was definitely an energy. I think that has to be one of the main things that I can remark on, that, you know, people were just, they were geared up. You know, there has been something, it was almost cathartic in a sense.
It was beautiful. I just remember sitting at Mile High Stadium, and the air was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. I mean, it was maybe, I don't know, 65 degrees.
Slight wind.
Slightly cool, slight wind, not too hot, not too cold. Beautiful sky.
I don't believe the monsoons that were prayed for.
No, focus on the family. James Dobson told all of his people, pray for rain, pray for monsoons, pray for typhoons.
Don't think there was a cloud in the sky,
yeah,
to be honest.
And apparently, either James Dobson is not a good Christian, or
God
doesn't listen to the prayers of James Dobson, but clearly there was no typhoon. Indeed, the typhoon, as we know, went to the Gulf Coast. Damaged a lot of people down there and delayed the start of the Republican National Convention.
I don't think that God listens to such pettiness.
I don't believe so either, and I don't think, frankly, such pettiness should be prayed for. But I remember that magical evening looking at the hope of the people around me. People actually thought our country can change,
that we
could get out of negative politics, that we can actually talk about what we believe in. And one of the things that struck me is that Barack Obama's speech was full of specifics. It was beautiful.
Oh, absolutely.
It was.
For one time ever, you cannot, well, I shouldn't say that. I think we're always very precise in what we stand for as far as our platform. But he presented it in the clearest of eloquence that he's able to deliver.
Universal
Have there healthcare. Be no question.
Right.
This
right,
is what I stand
right. And
for.
Listen up, Americans. I'm going to cut your taxes.
No. Listen. I'm going to cut your taxes.
Right.
He repeated it two or three times.
Now listen up, because they're going to, in the essence, the subject was, they're about to lie about this to you.
Yes.
So let me make it clear. Yes, I'm going to cut your taxes.
Mm-hmm.
95% of you with children, you're going to get a tax cut. This is a very large tax cut, and you're going to get it. And don't listen to the lies. And he just was very specific, universal health care, Iraq, energy, self-sufficiency. I was very impressed that he managed to both inspire us but also be very specific.
Well, I thought it was also unifying. He hit the whole, we're accused of it all the time, guns, gods, gays, and immigration, the new one.
Right,
You know, surely we can agree. You know, these are divisive topics, but you know, within an American society where we have to come together, you know, we have to live, you know, with all these divergent viewpoints, there has to be a middle ground.
Right, right. And he was very specific on those things,
and
saying that, you know, we can work together to reduce abortions, both Republicans and Democrats.
Oh, yes, certainly we can agree that reducing abortions is, you know, to the nation's benefit.
Right.
You know, and who can disagree with that?
Right.
One other thing that I almost thought was eerie, you know, everyone was so geared up. It was a long day. You know, you're out in the sun. You know, he got up to speak, and there's just this calm that kind of settled over the crowd. And, you know, the first, you know, applause lines, you know, cheering, you know, the whole week had been a pep rally. It kind of subsided. People were on their edge of the chairs just listening to every word. You know, there were the
claps. You could have heard a pin drop. There were 80,000 people in a convention, but at moments you could hear a pin drop.
And I found it, you know, at one point my heart literally was just beating out of my chest because I wanted to listen to every word he had to say because I knew history was being written.
Well, it was. And for me, the exciting thing was maybe America could finally dig itself from under.
No,
I mean, here we have massive debt and perpetual war and a president that takes the Constitution and is about ready to burn it. You know, I mean, spying on everybody, torturing everybody, throwing people in jail without trial, refusing open government, hiding secrets, secret prisons. And this was a man who actually believed in the Constitution, was a constitutional lawyer, respected the law. I hadn't heard of a president respect the law in 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, it was a magical moment.
And, you know, I got to say, although, you know, we're slided for this change mantra, you know, there's something true about it. You know, people are ready not just for our nation to go on a different course, the Bush administration last 8 years being abysmal. They literally want something intimate for themselves that, you know, housing, you know, the wages, health insurance, you know, the course of our nation has to change in some very intimate level.
They want Social Security, which Republicans, McCain wants to privatize. Right. You know, they care about each other. Here's the thing that struck me at the end of Obama's speech. At the end of the day, Obama reminded us of the biblical injunction, am I my brother's keeper?
Absolutely.
And if you're a Jew or if you're a Christian, either one,
then you
respect that phrase, you understand that the answer in the Bible is a resounding yes. Yes, you are your brother's keeper. The Bible tells us again and again and again, we have to look out for each other. Jesus hung out with lepers and prostitutes. He threw you know, the rich guys out of the temple. And that was the main thing he was saying, is that we're all in this together as Americans. We don't tear each other apart. We come together. And it's funny to me because, you know, a week later, it's hard to remember people. But we were all together that night. We were all in that together. And the idea was, John McCain, tell us your policies. Tell us what you want to do. Let's have an open, honest, fair debate. You give your issues, we'll give ours.
Oh, and he drew the line. You know, you want to talk about national security? You want to talk about who's going to be a better commander-in-chief? I'm ready for that debate.
Right.
Let's not beat around the bush and use, you know, these little key, you know, target words that get everyone scared and, you know, are going to run and vote for Republicans because you're afraid of another war. You know, there's a lot more at stake.
But obviously, and obviously I'm going to get to this with Mike Lane in just a few minutes, but it strikes me that this happens every 4 years. The Democrats run a very positive campaign. John Kerry ran a very positive campaign. Who can forget that in the Republican campaign in 2004, you had Republicans openly mocking Kerry's war service?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the Purple Heart Band-Aids? You know, saying
and
Kerry is a traitor because he only won, I don't know, 3 crosses and 4 Purple Hearts. Not a single Democrat ever mocked John McCain's military service. Yeah. Is it because we respect the military more than the Republicans?
There could be some slight truth to that.
I
think we're able to understand depth and complexity to the issue. You know, Vietnam was very controversial.
Right.
You know, and a lot of people that served were hurt by it.
Right.
You know, the mixed media that was thrown at them. But honestly, you know, there's a lot more politics behind it. And we can appreciate someone's service, how they, you know, suffered.
And disagree with their positions on the issues.
You know, I think
without denigrating them as a person.
It's
amazing to me because there's so many things that could have been said. Everything from McCain doesn't know how many houses he has.
I do believe that dissent is the ultimate form of patriotism.
You know, cheating on his wife. There's all these things you could have brought up.
Oh, they could.
But the Democrats never did. And we're going to get to the Republicans with Mike in a minute. But
he does have a thing for beauty queens, though,
doesn't he? We'll find out. At the end of the day, though, just give me some of your impressions of the convention. Just moments you remember. Either talking with Virginia delegates or out in the stars, whatever you want.
Yeah, you know, there had to have been actually that last moment, you know, when Obama had finished his speech. And, you know, I can have my emotional side, and I think, you know, knowing you're in that moment, you're almost ready for it. But it not just sees me, I think it sees a lot of people in the crowd. Yeah. He'd finished and just kind of took a step back, and there was the applause and the music, which was all orchestral. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a big, you know, rah-rah party. And he just had this dignified but very calm expression on his face, and it was against the backdrop of this huge stadium. I don't think we've, you know, really talked about
the magnitude. It's hard to convey.
84,000 people,
all believing as one, you know,
are just going off.
Right.
And I think he just sighed, and that's when I started to tear up, because we just wrote a chapter of history.
Right.
You know, this.
The other thing that's interesting was the music. The music wasn't rah rah fight your neighbor.
No.
You know, it was calm. It was, we can finally have a leader that reflects before doing, a leader who thinks about things and makes decisions upon reflection, not spur of the moment,
you know.
It just seems that he would be at 3 in the morning if he got that phone call
to use an ad.
That he would be calm and dignified. He would find out the facts.
I think it emphasized that we wanted it to be about his words. Not, you know, not the emotion that it provoked, you know, not the big party that it was all played up to be. You know, this was, you know, bringing 84,000 people together, 38 million, I believe, that watched it live on television, that there's a lot more, you know, than just this big party.
The other thing that struck me was there was no demonizing of Republicans. Mm-mm. When Republicans were mentioned, there was polite clapping. John McCain's service got polite clapping.
He was repeatedly, and I almost got frustrated.
Because
it
happened with every speech.
Honorable man, John McCain.
Right.
Yes, his service is honorable, but, you know.
Well, we've learned in the last week he's unfortunately lost all of his honor that he once had. I'm going to get into that in a minute.
Yeah, a little bit.
But it just struck me that Democrats don't demonize their enemies. They don't have to because Americans agree with them on the issues. It's only when someone doesn't agree with you on the issues you have to be a demon. Mm-hmm. It's like when someone argues with you and you're right. You know, you say 2 plus 2 is 4, and they say 2 plus 2 is 5, and you say, no, it's 4, and you prove it right, and then they start calling you names ad hominem attacks. Why? Because they know you're right. Mm-hmm. When you do that, but here's, I guess, my fear, and I'll admit it, no question about it. Are Americans intelligent enough to see the difference between issues they believe in and a demonization campaign? If they support Obama on the issues, as 70% of Americans do, will they follow through with their support, or will they fall to the demonization that the John McCain campaign wants to start?
I wish I had that crystal ball. I mean, if it
That's what scares me, honestly.
Obama's own words, and I think it needs to be repeated again and again and again, because he's not this celebrity. He is only there, and he said it in his speech, because of every single person that gave, you know, $25.
Right, right. Which is also amazing when you think about it. That was his average donation, was $25, whereas McCain has all those corporate interests.
That he has been lifted up by people's faith in him, you know, what he's being able to provide as far as promise and change, and that whole message of, you know, doing better for our nation, that people are the ones that have lifted him up as a spokesperson, but it's really this grassroots movement that is the core of the campaign.
Well, thank you, Shannon, for coming on, for reminding us of what happened 10 days ago. I will give the other side, folks. I'm going to bring a Republican on who's going to defend their conduct last week. But let me ask you this. Whatever you think of McCain and Obama, whatever you think of the conventions, I would encourage you, it's online, watch Obama's speech again.
Absolutely.
Don't let Palin saying he eats arugula lettuce be your last thought in your mind. Listen to Obama's plan for America before you vote this November. We'll be right back with Mike Lane right after this.
This one just books at the library.
Il n'y a plus que des livres à la bibliothèque.
Hello. You have a lot of great books here today. You know there's more than just books at the library.
I know. There's more than just books at the library.
I don't want to be hooked to a machine.
I want all the medical treatment available to me.
I wouldn't want my family to have to make this decision.
My doctor knows what's best for me.
An advanced directive is your life on your terms. Talk with your family. Decide what's right for you. Then put it in writing.
Documenting my wishes today means my family won't have to make heart-wrenching decisions later.
To learn more, visit www.putitinwriting.org.
1,200 American youth run away from their homes every day. The National Runaway Switchboard is here to help. 1-800-RUNAWAY. If you are a runaway, thinking about running away from home, or a parent or guardian concerned about issues facing your child, call us 24 hours a day. 1-800-RUNAWAY. In times of crisis, hope is just a phone call away. 1-800-RUNAWAY.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. I also want to encourage folks to call in. This is a call-in show. And if you agree or disagree with anything I have to say or my guest has to say, let us know. Call in. The numbers are right there on your screen. My guest right now is Mike Lane. He is the president of Intellifant Strategies. It's his job to give Republicans the strategies they need to win elections. And Mike, I think it's pretty clear what strategy the John McCain campaign has used. Don't talk about the issues. Don't let people know where you stand. Attack, attack, attack.
Mark, as you know, I could not disagree with you more. I think McCain has been very forthcoming on the issues. There is not a single issue that you could ask me about that I couldn't tell you what McCain's position is right now.
But he did share it with us at the convention.
Of course he did. He talked about every issue at the convention.
Really? I don't remember privatizing Social Security being there. I don't remember a discussion of evangelical issues being there. I just remember a lot of talk about how he's a hero.
I don't think you're going to find any evangelical issues being a priority of the administration, and I say that for everybody to hear. It's not something that John McCain's going to pursue.
It's just something that Sarah Palin's going to pursue if the cancer comes back.
You know what,
Mark?
Sarah Palin has a 14-year record of being in public office, and she has no record that I'm aware of or anybody else of actively pushing any issues that you would put under the category of evangelical issues.
Well, I'll tell you one that I put under that, banning books. She insisted that a librarian ban, for adults, not for children, a whole series of books. She started to force the librarian out of office. There was actually a public outcry in her little town of Wasilla, and finally she allowed the librarian to stay for a while until the librarian resigned. Isn't that pushing a particular perspective? Ban books? I mean, to me, that's something that fascists do, not mayors.
Well, I don't think she was trying to burn any books, but, you know, what...
Let me
give you another example. When she was governor of Alaska, there was an attempt by the legislature to repeal domestic partner benefits for state employees, and she vetoed it.
Well, she was told by her legal counsel it was unconstitutional, that she had no choice.
She said
she was against it.
A governor can do whatever they want. Now, it can be ruled unconstitutional. You can veto or sign anything you want. She vetoed it.
She ran against it. Here's my thing, and we'll get to Sarah Palin in a minute, because I do have a lot to say about her. And particularly about the vetting process to choose her, all the things that John McCain didn't know. But at the end of the day, it seems to me that John McCain is trying desperately to put one over on the voters. John McCain claims that he, and this made me laugh, that he is going to have more change than Barack Obama.
Which is exactly true.
Oh, my God. It's true. Okay, I want you to name for me all the ways that John McCain differs from Bush policies and will change Bush policy. Go.
Okay. The first thing is on earmarks. He certainly, has indicated that he is going to flat stop earmarks in their tracks. Under George Bush, they mushroomed about 800%.
Let's talk about earmarks, and we'll get to the other stuff in a second. He has chosen his vice president,
right,
the largest earmarking governor per capita of all 50 states. Sarah Palin has asked for more earmarks from the federal government than any other state. In fact, she's twice as high as the second highest state. She asked for $295 per Alaskan. Just to give you an example, Obama, who's been criticized by McCain for some earmarks, got $25 per person from Illinois. She's gotten 12 times the federal largesse. She's the one who asked for, demanded, wanted the Bridge for Nowhere, wore shirts about the Bridge for Nowhere, demanded it, got $223 million. Then when she saw the political winds were changing, One month after John McCain criticized the deal, she said, oh, well, I'm against it too, but she kept every single dollar of the money and won't give it back. This is Mrs. Earmark. She came every week, every year to Washington, lobbyist in tow, demanding earmarks, and in Wasilla, Alaska, she got $27 million for a town of 5,000 people. That's more than $5,000 a person. This is a woman who rakes in the poor.
Okay, Mark, first of all, you know, no governor demands anything of Congress. If you demand things, you get nothing. So, you know, you're mischaracterizing the whole thing happened. Now, you have to understand your constituency. What's your job? Your job as mayor of Wasilla or as governor of Alaska is to protect and promote the interests of your particular people. Now, when she vetoed the bridge from nowhere, she didn't veto the bridge from nowhere because people from Montana and people from Virginia and people from New Mexico were sending their funds up to Alaska to build the bridge from nowhere. She vetoed it because there was an attendant contribution from the Alaskan Treasury that was necessary to make that happen, and she was going to protect the taxpayers of her state by vetoing it, not having them do it. As vice president, she will have a new obligation, which is to protect the taxpayers of the United States. You can bet that between her and John McCain, earmarks are going to be a thing of the past. They're on record for it. It is going to stop dead in its tracks, and they are going to take Congress on, and Congress ain't going to like them. They're not running for Miss Congeniality anymore. They're running for president and vice president, and they're going
to
win.
So she loves earmarkers.
Change is coming to Washington.
No. So, let me understand this, your argument here. She loves earmarks. She's the biggest earmarking governor in the United States. She got $5,000 a person for her town from you and me, from taxpayers, compared to, I looked up Boise, Idaho. Boise, Idaho has 200,000 people and got some $5 million in earmarks. She had 5,000 people and got $27 million in earmarks. So in other words, while everyone in her town got $5,000, everyone in Boise, Idaho got about 20 bucks. The point is, the queen of earmarks, the woman who is in charge of the biggest pork in all of America, the one who worked with Ted Stevens and Don Young and praised the largesse, the woman who not only wanted the bridge for nowhere, but then after Congress said, this doesn't look to be so good, John McCain started criticizing, kept the $223 million and refused to return it. Ms. Pork is going to suddenly switch on a dime and say, I don't believe in pork. I don't believe in earmarks anymore. That's what you want people to believe.
Mark, you fundamentally misunderstand everything you learned while you were working in Congress. Governors don't demand things. Governors don't have earmarks. What happens is you don't tell Don Young or Ted Stevens anything. Those are two of the old bulls of Capitol Hill, both of them under investigation now, I might add. They are the master appropriators. They bring home the bacon to their own state. Nobody tells them what to do or what not to do. If you do, then, you know, you just get crushed. If you look at the things that came to Wasilla, you will note that probably, you know, I'm sure she said, well, thank you very much, but the vast majority of things were that she neither sought nor asked for. They were just given to her on a silver platter by the appropriations process, and she took them and said, thank you very much, as any mayor should and would do. You know, here's what you do. When the game's played one way, you play by the rules of the game. When you have a chance to change the rules of the game to something else, you change the rules and then you play by the new rules. But why would you cut your nose off to spite your face when the rules say this is how you play?
It's funny. You say she never sought or asked for these things. I actually have a T-shirt. She's in a T-shirt that says Bridge to Nowhere.
I said most of them. I didn't say all. Right.
She proudly says how she worked with Don Young and Stevens, by the way,
who you used
to defend them before they were indicted. I remember that on this show a few weeks ago.
Actually, I don't think Don Young's indicted. Only Ted Stevens indicted.
He's going to be soon.
Well, we don't know that. You know, I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt.
We'll see. But here's my point, and it's not so much about Palin as it's about McCain. There are people in Congress, there are Republicans in Congress, who are out to stop spending, who are out to stop earmarks. I'll give you an example, a name you know well.
John McCain.
Jeff Flake. Congressman of Arizona is known as Mr. Anti-Earmark. He's the guy that goes to the floor and fights every single one of them. He is a hero in your party, extreme minority, because your party always beats him up. But he's someone who really wants to stop earmarks. John McCain, if he wanted to stop earmarks, could have chosen someone who's at the forefront of this, Jeff Flake. Instead, he chose the biggest earmarking governor of all the 50 states.
Well, there's actually another one bigger than Jeff Flake, which is Mike Pence from Indiana.
Mike Pence is too. I'll give you Mike Pence.
You know, but
he could have chosen him.
What you do when you put together a ticket, Mark, is you don't, you know, usually go out on the ideological limb, you know, we'll be right and we'll lose. You look for somebody who can put a ticket together that balances and appeals to the public and can help you get the votes you need to win, because after all, ultimately you need to win. Even Barack Obama knew that he needed to win when he picked Joe Biden to fill in all the holes he has on his resume and see if he could balance his ticket and see if he could come up with something that would appeal to the American people. Now, if you look at the polls that came out this morning, he apparently made an error in judgment on that. But right now, you know, Barack Obama chose Joe Biden for political reasons and not for any other reasons.
It's okay.
And I'm willing to grant you that John McCain considered politics when he chose Governor Palin.
I'm glad you're willing to grant it, because I think it's one of the most cynical choices in a generation.
Best choice
and
that we've had.
And we'll talk more about that. But here's what I guess I'm trying to say. You said, and I'm going to ask you for more, that change that John McCain would make from George Bush's earmarks. And yet what do we mm-hmm. find? We find the same old Republican Congress that did all those earmarks before, and you find if John McCain picks the leading earmarker. So it doesn't seem to me like there's going to be much change, but he says he's going to change.
Well, we disagree
tell me
on
this.
That.
Tell me this. What else will John McCain change?
Okay,
where do his policies differ from George Bush?
John McCain, unlike George Bush, has been a deficit hawk from the time he's been in
Congress. Oh, that's so not true!
He will actively pursue...
Great, and you studied his positions? Tell me what he'd cut. Let's go.
Well, I think you're looking at a pretty substantial cut in the farm program in addition to the earmarks.
In the farm program? The
yep.
one that the Congress overruled Bush's veto on? That's going to be very hard to cut. But
well,
all right.
You know, you do what you can.
I'm going to look at his literature, because I would be surprised if that's in his literature, but I'll look it up. You say he's going to cut the farm program. What
let,
else?
Let me bring to your attention and the
what
viewers. Let me bring to your attention and the viewers' attention that it was a short 7 years ago when John McCain voted against the Bush tax cuts, thinking we should have them now.
But he flip-flopped on that.
And I'll tell you why he flip-flopped. But he voted against the Bush cuts, and he said at the time, because he saw them as a budget buster
right.
that would create a deficit.
He
and
was
he
against
voted against
them before
them.
He was for them,
right.
but now he's neutered. He's now, no longer the maverick. He is now
he is the
Cheney
maverick.
And Rove's man.
Oh, Mark, he has spent 7.5 years being George Bush's biggest pain
no
in
way.
The butt.
No, he spent about 5 years, and no. he recognized that you can't win the election by running against your party, so he decided to cave in, throw away all his principles, lose all his honor, and do whatever the right wing
okay,
tells him to do.
Okay, now, can't spend that much time running against your party. He ran against his party just last year in the immigration reform bill.
And what
just
did he do?
Last
he
year.
Flip-flopped on
no.
that, too.
No, he did not
John
flip-flop.
McCain said publicly
no,
that he
not.
Would not vote for his own bill.
Right.
Did you not hear him say that?
And what he said was, I've heard from the American people. I understand that we need to do border security first, and then we'll come back and do the rest of it. He would not vote for it as a package. He would vote for them consecutively.
Right. He wrote
the
his own
stuff.
Bill.
The same stuff.
And he wouldn't vote for his own bill.
He will vote for the same
and
stuff
you call
consecutively.
Kerry a flip-flopper? Folks, what do you think? You have the number, 888-488-MARK. Give us a call.
Osama bin Laden calls getting nuclear weapons a religious duty.
Today, materials that can be used to make nuclear weapons are stored in more than 40 countries.
Sometimes protected by just a chain-link fence.
Yet not enough is being done to lock down these materials
before terrorists steal them. Why did we learn all this?
My mother.
My son.
My sister-in-law.
Were all murdered September 11th.
Help protect America.
Together we can.
Please join us.
The stem cell issue is being debated throughout the country. Truth is, most everyone has an opinion, even if they don't know the facts.
Let's stop arguing and start really understanding the potential of stem cell research.
For us and for millions of Americans living with disabilities, get the facts.
Call 1-877-842-3442 for free information from the Stem Cell Research Foundation. That's 1-877-842-3442.
Following the tragic events of September 11th, there have been hundreds of violent attacks against innocent Americans.
Remember what that flag you're waving stands for.
Remember, please stop the hate.
We're stronger when we are united.
Remember.
Remember what that flag you're waving stands for.
One nation under God.
Indivisible.
With liberty.
And justice.
For all.
In America, there's either room for everyone or it's not America.
Don't pick the wrong fight.
Let's keep America land of the free.
Stop the hate.
Planning a home renovation? Put this at the top of your to-do list. Because after 10 years, none of you are protected against tetanus and another potentially fatal disease, diphtheria. A minor injury, such as a cut or a scrape, can put you at risk for a tetanus infection. And while safety gear offers some protection, an up-to-date vaccination called the TD booster is the best insurance against tetanus. So get the TD booster. If it's been 10, do it again.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney, and my guest is Republican strategist Mike Lay. And we're talking about, of course, the presidential election of 2008. What else is there to talk about? Well, there's the vice presidential choices. But basically, we're talking about the president and vice presidential elections. And here's what I'm trying to figure out, and I've been trying to figure it out for a very long time. John McCain comes to this convention and says he's going to have massive change. Washington won't know what hit them. And I'm trying to figure out what he's going to change, because he agrees with Bush on privatizing Social Security. He agrees with Bush on keeping insurance companies in charge of our health care and denying to poor people any access to health care. He agrees with George Bush that we want permanent basis.
I don't think either George Bush or John McCain believe that, but keep going.
Well, they don't believe that the government should subsidize people having health care. In fact, John McCain wants to tax health care.
No. In fact, I think you'll find that there are circumstances under which they think that limited government subsidies do make some sense, and they support them.
In emergency rooms. Anywhere else?
Among other things.
Where else? Well, John McCain's health plan doesn't provide any health care. He provides a tax cut if you already pay a lot of taxes.
And I think he wants to see a tax benefit for individuals who buy their own health care. That's just sort of a subsidy.
If you're a poor person and you don't have the money to pay for your health care, or even if you're a middle-class person, there's 50 million Americans that don't have health care. That's
right.
One in six of us.
Let's say some of them are middle-class.
Right.
If they got a tax-deductible tax break for their health care and they could afford it, wouldn't that be a government subsidy?
Not if they're not paying those taxes. Listen, a lot of middle-class Americans pay Social Security tax, which John McCain's considering raising, by the way, and Medicaid tax and other FICA stuff, but they don't pay the income taxes that would be necessary to get that tax cut.
Okay. Generally, John McCain believes that a free market approach will work much better to most programs, health care happens to be what we're discussing now, than massive government intervention in the marketplace, which distorts things and never provides the kind of service or programs or benefit that you're really looking for. So
I don't hear Canadians complaining or English
I hear them complaining all the time.
Not at all. They have 80 to 85% approval.
Oh,
now, you may talk to the 10%.
Oh, Mark.
The disgruntled 10%.
Canadians and Europeans come here all the time for health care because they're not allowed to pay for it in their own country, and they know it's much better here.
Look.
We have a health care system that's the envy of the world. Canadians do not like their health care
system.
Really?
Because I think
it's rationed. They have rationed health care in Europe and in Canada. It's just not something that we're going to go to. The American people don't want that.
Maybe, Mike, if you have so many homes that you don't know which home you live in, maybe for them the health care is the best in the world. You know, I don't doubt that Cindy McCain gets very good health care. Barack Obama's plan would say this. John McCain and Barack Obama get the same health care. It's provided by the United States government for all members of Congress. And Obama says, let's let other Americans buy into this same system. What's so wrong with that?
Well, because the first thing is when you have the government run everything, it's going to go downhill.
No. Obama doesn't support that. And no one's going to have good health care. There's a difference between Obama and Hillary here. Obama doesn't support government running everything. He supports it as an option for people who can't get health care otherwise. They can go to the government. Obama isn't banning insurance companies. But he thinks, though, and I agree with him, that when you have the government compete, they will win because they don't have those middleman costs that insurance companies do. But he's not going to ban them.
Didn't Hillary Clinton beat Barack Obama over the head for about a month with the message that his plan did not provide for universal coverage?
She did.
And she was right.
Well, her point was that not everyone may buy into the system. But Obama would allow everyone to buy in if they wanted to. That's his plan. His plan is actually less radical than Hillary's. You should appreciate it as a Republican because he doesn't force everyone into having health care. He says, if you want it, we will make it affordable to buy it. What's so wrong with that?
Why is the government, I mean, why am I?
I actually supported Hillary's plan, to be honest with you.
Why am I sitting here buying your health care? I guess that's the question, Mark. You can afford your own health care. Why am I buying your health care?
Why am I buying the people of Wasilla, Alaska moose? You know?
That's a good question.
Why am I paying for a sports center in Wasilla, Alaska, because we've got, you know, Sarah Palin going in with her high-powered lobbyist all the time? I think Washington should change.
I am 1,000% with you on that, and that's what John McCain and Sarah Palin are going to do. They're going to change the way that operates.
Shouldn't she start by giving me back my bridge to nowhere that I paid for and that she never spent?
Go ahead. Take it.
That's $223 million that's in Alaska that she's keeping.
No.
She said, thanks, but no thanks. We'll keep it. That's from her campaign manager. I can give you his name. Mike Elderling. I even remember it. How do you like that? Mike Elderling, her campaign coordinator, in Ketchikan, Alaska, said of the $223 million, thanks, but no thanks. We'll keep the money.
Okay, well, that was Mr. Elderling. I don't think that's
going to
stand.
Speaking for her.
I don't think that's going to stand. I really don't think that's going to stand.
So she'll play politics and she'll give the money back? We'll see. Speaking of Sarah Palin.
I think we'll see that coming back.
Why is she hiding from the press? Is she in a secure location with Dick Cheney?
Sarah, come out!
Excuse me. You have to answer questions, too.
Does Tom Brokaw have some sort of birthright that he gets to, you know, interview her and pass on whether or not she's qualified to serve in public office? I don't think Tom Brokaw has that birthright.
You don't?
I think Sarah Palin is going to take her case to the American people, and the American people are the ones who will make the judgment, not Tom Brokaw and not Chris Wallace. And not Bob Schieffer.
You know what?
They are not relevant to the process.
I think since 1952, and I may be slightly off on my years, every single president and vice presidential candidate in the United States of America has gone on Meet the Press and addressed questions that the moderator was asking them. For a long time, most recently it was Tim Russert, there were moderators before then. Most presidential and vice presidential candidates understand that they should be able to answer tough questions from a member of the press. Everyone seems to understand it but Sarah Palin, because obviously she's got a lot to hide.
You know what?
And we can go through what she has to hide, the corruption scandals in Alaska, you know, the fact that her she seems to support this secessionist party, this really weird Alaskan independence party that her husband was a member of. She's going and delivering keynote addresses at their convention. They support secession!
Okay.
Aren't we done with the Civil War? She's got some crazy thoughts out there.
You know what? No. The Alaskans are not done with the Civil War. She does not support secession, but let's talk about
what
the Alaskan Independence Party does.
All right, let's talk about it.
The Alaskan Independence Party is sick and tired of the rest of the country telling them what they can do in Alaska.
They want to secede.
I disagree.
And
they have this little party that doesn't amount to much, that has a few votes, and it's worth courting and stuff like that. And, you know, people go to it and they say, oh, will you help us? It's, you know, the same thing as a Democrat in New York State going to the Liberal Party, or the Republican in New York State going to the Conservative Party.
You know, I don't see it as the same at all.
Or as in somebody going to the Libertarian Party and say, support me. Look,
tell me this.
Alaskans are tired of being told by the other 49 states what they can and cannot do in their state. There is a little 3% party up there that says, oh, we ought to secede. They're worth courting. Come on, they're nice people.
They're not worth courting. Let me tell you something.
They're Americans.
When is the last time you heard of a Republican or a Democratic candidate, and maybe you know of one because I don't, candidate for president or vice president, going to a Libertarian convention or a Green convention or even
Bob
a
Barr.
Party other than, he's no longer a Republican. He resigned from your party. He's now a Libertarian. That's different. I'm talking about someone running for Republican office and going to another party. Or running for Democratic office. I mean, I guess the example would be Joe Lieberman speaking at the Republican National Convention. He's going to be punished for that. The point is that
you
people
don't... You can't punish
don't,
him. You don't have the seats. You can't punish him.
We can't yet. We will in 3 months. Give us a chance. Here's the heart of the question, though. You don't normally go and speak before a party if you don't have some sympathy for their goals. I saw Sarah Palin's speech before the Alaskan Independence Party. Maybe you saw it, too. It was a video clip that she herself prepared. And she talked about Alaskan self-sufficiency. Now, I don't know. I'm of this weird notion that we 50 states should have trade among us and really shouldn't try to be self-sufficient. Maybe if I supported Alaskan independence, I'd care about self-sufficiency. Why did she use those words?
Mark.
She was playing to them, and you know
it. They have self-sufficiency. It's a very well-run state. The New York Times has already editorialized.
I doubt they get oranges. I don't think they grow oranges.
It's one of the more difficult states to run.
No, it's an easy state to run. They get all that oil revenue.
Well, tell the New York Times that, because the New York Times says it's one of the more difficult states to run. Now, you know, what do they object to? They object to the fact that the rest of the country tells them that they can't drill in Anwar. Okay, that's pretty much the issue right down there. This is not a national treasure. This is an Alaskan piece of real estate.
She can agree whatever she wants on Anwar.
98% of Alaskans want drilled on, and their whole point is, if Teddy Kennedy and Barack Obama and Joe Biden are going to tell us what we can and cannot do in their state. Can you imagine Alaskans telling Joe Biden what he could do in Wilmington? Oh, come on, please. You know, Joe Biden wouldn't let them secede. He'd kick them out of the union.
It's
so
federal
we're talking
land. Does that mean that in Vermont they can
take
that all?
Taken against Alaska's, against the free will of the Alaskan people, appropriated in a midnight raid in Congress.
I would think Vermonters would probably want to get rid of some military bases in Vermont that are federal land. Do you support Vermonters' right to get rid of military bases? I don't think so.
No, I don't support...
It's federal land.
No, it's federal government-owned land. I don't support the right of Alaska to secede. I'm saying you
I'm
got
glad
a little,
to hear it, because I'm
got,
not so sure about no, Sarah and Todd
got,
Palin.
Well, I'm Todd Palin, who cares what Todd Palin thinks?
Who cares what he thinks? No, wait a minute.
Sarah Palin,
your party has
Sarah
been...
Sarah Palin does not want secession of Alaska. She thinks Alaska is the great 50th state of this country. It is, and or 49th, excuse me. And there's no way that other than just courting a few votes and perhaps even doing something to make her husband happy, that there was anything more to that.
Look, your party has done its best to demonize Michelle Obama, to suggest that her views matter. And that she's important. I mean, you've said all kinds of things. Oh, Michelle Obama doesn't love her country. I've heard all these things from
the
Republicans.
Who in John McCain's campaign said that?
Well, it's been your party, right?
Okay, who in our party said that?
Well, I know Rush Limbaugh said it. I know Sean Hannity said it. I know Bill O'Reilly said it.
You know what? I don't.
I can't say that for sure that anyone in the McCain campaign said it, though I know that Congressman Westmoreland of Georgia called them both uppity. He thought they were uppity.
Okay, I didn't hear
that.
Republican
of Georgia.
I didn't hear that particular quote. I can tell you that neither Sean Hannity nor Rush Limbaugh speaks for the Republican Party.
I understand.
And I can tell you for a fact that Bill, what's his name again?
O'Reilly.
Bill O'Reilly.
You've heard of him.
Tells you up and down three times a week that he is not a member of any party. He is not a Republican.
Yeah,
he
right.
is not a Democrat.
Right, right. And,
so,
and Todd Palin was a member of the Alaskan Independence Party. Here's the thing.
And no longer is.
I'm glad he left to help his wife's campaign. But
no, he left a long time ago. He did.
I think it was 2002.
Well, okay, that's 6 years ago.
That's
6 years ago.
So long ago. The point is, this is a wacky party. Now, I don't really think she supports secession. I'm not sure about her husband.
She doesn't.
By the way, she was asked whether she supports having a vote on secession, and she ducked the question. She said no comment. Actually, the McCain campaign said no comment. But here's the heart of it.
A vote on secession would fail 80%. It would.
Here's the heart of it. These are some wacky views.
As you point out, they don't have oranges.
And what she does, they don't have oranges. They
no.
need Florida.
Or lemons.
Exactly. But they also have a ton of money from oil revenue. In some sense, mm-hmm. they're the richest state in the country, not because of anything Sarah Palin is, but because there's a bunch of oil under that tundra that isn't in Delaware. There just isn't that much. So she has a lot of benefits there. But my point is this. Sarah Palin is a panderer. And by the same token, John McCain is a panderer. Just as she goes to a 3% really off-the-wall party supporting Alaskan secession, which I have to admit I didn't even know was an issue until I researched Sarah Palin just
it's
a couple weeks
issue.
Ago. I didn't even know. I mean, I thought the Civil War was over. She's willing to pander to them. She's willing to claim up and down. I heard her today. I was against the Bridge to Nowhere without mentioning that she not only asked for the money, begged for the money, got the money and kept the money, and now she's saying, I was against the bridge. She's still building roads on Gravina Island, on the other side of the... She spent $25 million in federal funds because her administrator said, oh, well, we don't want to have to give the money back because then it would go back to the federal government. I mean, this is a woman who panders. And my point is that John McCain, by choosing her, is the ultimate panderer. He chose her, let's face it, because she's a woman. You're not going to doubt that, are you?
I think there are a number of considerations that went into it, and I think the fact that he made a historic choice and chose a woman for Vice President of the United States on the Republican ticket was certainly part of it. But I think her leadership, her experience, her maverick reputation, her achievements as mayor of Wasilla. I mean, Mark.
Achievements.
Let's look at what's gone on so
mayor
far.
Of Wasilla.
Okay?
Wait, mayor of Wasilla.
When
she hired an administrator. You know that. She didn't run the city herself.
When the
5,000 people.
When
she needs an administrator at $40,000 a year.
When the Democratic convention was up, Obama, Biden were up by 8 points.
That's right.
Today in the Gallup, CBS Gallup, right. You know McCain, Palin are up by 10 points among likely
voters.
You know
what? Let's cut the break. We have a lot to talk about. Let's just skip the break and let's move right on. Because it seems to me, and thank you for doing that, by the way. See, they do that in the back.
It's good to have a producer in your pocket, huh?
It is. Yes, they are up. I don't know. I don't believe the Gallup 10 points poll up. There are other polls that show a smaller convention bounce.
I believe it's a statistical outlier, yes.
Yes, but
it's a statistical outlier.
I don't deny they're up. But here's my problem, and here's what's really got to burn my saddle. I am not happy about this. Republicans repeatedly refuse to talk the issues, refuse to talk about them, and use negative campaigning, Sarah Palin talking about Barack Obama the arugula eater. If she wants to talk about Obama's record, if she wants to say that she doesn't support what he did in terms of, you know, rounding up loose nukes or ethics reform or putting government spending on a website, which he did with Tom Coburn, by the way, the most conservative Republican in the Senate. If she doesn't like Obama's record, fine, attack him on his record. If she doesn't like his positions, fine, attack him on his positions. You don't hear Democrats, you don't hear Obama or Biden saying, Palin eats moose burgers. You heard, in fact, Obama and Palin saying, you know, don't talk about our kids, it's not relevant. The point is that Democrats are trying to discuss the issues, Republicans are going negative, and yes, it does sadden me that it appears so far to be working.
Mark, you know, Barack Obama's speech broke with history. Normally you have, as is historical precedent, you have the vice president is the one that attacks the other side, and then the president gets up there above it all and just talks about how essentially wonderful things are going to be, and they outline their program. Barack Obama broke with history and spent at least 12 minutes of his speech at that Greek temple in Invesco Field talking about everything negative about John McCain.
What did he say about McCain? What did he say about McCain? He said John McCain just doesn't get it. He said, I'm not saying John McCain doesn't care. He's saying he doesn't get it. He's saying he's out of touch. Right. He doesn't understand
and,
that there are real people suffering in America.
And John
that
McCain,
is a policy
and
position.
And John McCain honored and saluted Barack Obama from the podium as Republicans honored and saluted Hillary Clinton from the podium, honored and saluted...
Oh, Republicans love Hillary now.
You know
They weren't saying such things before.
She's a historic woman. She deserves credit for what she's done.
Of course she does.
And Republicans honored her from the podium at their convention.
Yeah, they honored her only after she'd lost. You know that. They were saying all kinds of nasty
things. They didn't have their convention until after she lost. How are they going to,
Oh, you didn't hear them say anything on the air before? You didn't hear Dick Morris say those awful things he said about her?
Dick Morris,
Karl Rove say those awful
worked
things?
For Hillary Clinton.
Dick Morris, as you know, ever since he was fired for seeing that prostitute with Bill Clinton, hates the Clintons more than any person in America, and you know it. Look,
there would seem to be a personal disconnect there.
Here's my question. Here's the heart of the thing, and then we got a caller on the line. We actually have two callers on the line.
Great.
All right, you know what? We'll get to our callers. I'll come back to this.
All right.
I'm still going to be on you. Let's go to George from Fairfax. George, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you. I've got two basic comments. First of all, well, three really. The first thing is, Palin is a distractor. There is no discussion about the issue. But just one little comment I would have about Palin. When she was up there giving her speech, they had the children taking care of the children.
Right.
She is taking away the childhood from those children because she wants to keep having children. And that's so unfair to those children. The husband was there doing nothing. He could have been taking care of that child. But the bigger issue is the distraction. What we have is a fundamental problem with McCain's economics. He is basing his economics on Milton Friedman. We saw what happened to Milton Friedman's economic plan when he had a clean sheet of paper in Chile. What that happened after Pinochet was put in there, they started with, I think it was 4.3% unemployment. They privatized... the government businesses sold that stuff off. They privatized pension things. They deregulated a whole slew of things. Does this sound familiar? But let me try and make it quick.
Okay.
The point is that after 10 years, they brought back the unions. They brought back a minimum wage. They brought back the businesses that they sold off, and that resurrected the economy.
George,
McCain and Bush are on the same economic plan,
exactly.
The Milton Friedman one, and there is no difference. And he's already said that his plans to perpetuate that, which means that we are about to have the second Great Depression if McCain is elected.
George, that's no mistake.
No,
thank you for your call, and I appreciate your passion, and I agree with most of what you had to say. I mean, the point is that John McCain and George Bush come from the same economic thing. They both want to privatize Social Security. John McCain wants to tax you more than George Bush because he wants to tax your health care benefits. But basically, they come from the same economic page. We need to give more. John McCain, for example, supports more corporate welfare to oil companies, just as George Bush did. I mean, it's going to be four more years. And for Republicans to pretend it's not going to be four more years of the same is just lying to people.
Okay, you know what? The first thing I'll say is if you want to run against George Bush, go ahead.
It's the same thing.
I know. And he's not on the ballot, and you're going to lose
same
if you run against
thing.
George Bush. I'm just
it's
giving you
same policies,
I'm giving
Mike.
You political advice, Mark.
Same
you run
policies.
Against George Bush, you're going to lose. Run against John McCain. You might beat him, but you're not going to beat George
John
Bush.
John McCain and George Bush now, are indistinguishable.
Now, George is a nice guy. I mean, but I don't think George would argue with my characterization of him as a socialist. I mean, he wants government control of these things. That's the definition of socialism, government control of the economy. Now, John
he
McCain...
Didn't, he didn't say he wanted government control of the economy. He wanted more social things, things like Social Security and minimum wage. George does not support... He did not support a government
George,
command economy.
George,
I didn't hear him say
George,
that.
George is a socialist.
I haven't
okay?
heard him say that.
And
I'm defending my caller.
Okay,
I haven't heard him say
you
that.
You can do that. What John McCain and Sarah Palin believe is that...
Isn't it Palin, by the way?
Palin, Palin. Okay, I'll go for Palin. That's fine.
I think it's Palin.
Is that the free market is the best arbiter and provider of economic freedom and opportunity, far superior to any government bureaucrat sitting there deciding what's best for you in your economic life. And I'm pretty certain
hold on,
do...
Free market. I got to show you the front page of today's Washington Post. Republicans claim they believe in the free market, but when they have unregulation and you have companies that fail, the United States seizes control, and guess what? Taxpayers have to pay trillions of dollars, I don't know how many it'll be, they have trillions of dollars, excuse me, in assets, billions of dollars, to companies that fail. Why is it? Well, they have trillions of dollars in assets, right. But we're going to have to pay billions of dollars to bail them out, probably hundreds of billions of dollars.
It may turn out
why
that we don't
pay a thing. Why is it that McCain and Bush and all of them want free market until the rich guys get in trouble and then we taxpayers have to bail them out?
Okay, this is a Hobson's choice. First of all, yes, the taxpayers are going to stop this right now, but it may turn out, depending on how this whole thing plays out, and it's going to be the next president that makes this decision. What we see now is only a stopgap measure to get us through the election so the next president and next Congress can make the decision. But what we have is essentially two quasi-government agencies created by the Democrats, by the way. These are Democratic ideas.
And they used to be owned by the government.
That artificially,
and once we made them private, they failed.
They artificially manipulate the market, and they create things that shouldn't exist, and we get ourselves into this situation. Simple fact is it's a Hobson's choice, Mark. These organizations are too big to fail,
you know
okay?
What? I want to protect them, too.
These things fail. We are dead in the water. We're talking worldwide depression if they
fail. I want to protect them, too, but you know who I want to suffer?
I'm willing to compromise our values on this particular thing because the alternative is so much worse.
I want them to succeed as well. The answer is this. If the private market can't handle it, then we need to put them back the way they were when they were first created. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac used to be owned by the government.
Get rid of them.
They did a wonderful thing since the Great Depression. As soon as private interest took hold of it, private interest got extremely rich off taxpayer dollars, and that's unfortunately what your party keeps believing in. I got to go to a caller, though, because he's been holding a long time. Bill from Falls Church. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and I hope that you'd let me finish this comment before you interrupt
me. Depends on how long you go, but start.
Okay. Obama is on record as opposing the Born Alive Infant Protection Act. That means that a baby out of the womb, in the opinion of Obama, can be with medical treatment can be withheld from that baby and the baby let to die.
Not true.
That is true.
Absolutely untrue, and I know this. I've studied it for
myself. It is. No,
I'm talking about the Illinois law or the federal law, first of all.
I'm talking about the federal law.
The federal law is even easier.
See, you've interrupted me. You're not letting me finish the comment.
Because you said it's false.
Well, you interrupted me. You're going to let me finish?
I know, but it's absolutely false.
You're going to let me make my point.
I know, but you just said
are you
going to
make let me
false.
Make my point and then interrupt me?
All right, you said something that's false. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, that's your opinion.
No, it's a fact.
No, your opinion is not fact. It's your opinion.
It's not my opinion.
Your opinion is not fact. My opinion is fact. Your opinion is false.
Under federal law.
Okay, so let me finish my comment. See, you've interrupted me. You've done exactly what the liberals do. You've done exactly what the liberals do. You talk.
That is the fact. If you have another point to bring up, go right ahead.
Point.
Bill, this is Mike. Isn't the real focus of what Barack Obama supports and what he voted for that you can withhold medical treatment from a child that comes out of the womb through a botched abortion?
Let me make my point.
But that's the
Let
point,
me
right?
make my point.
Go ahead, make your point.
Okay, so Obama is in favor of, he agrees to withhold medical treatment from a human being outside of the womb.
You know what? If you have proof of that,
okay,
put it on my website.
His administration is going to do a health care plan. You can withhold medical treatment from fully developed human beings?
No.
What about the elderly?
That's as much what, of a lie as
you're interrupting me. Talk over me again. Talk over me again.
It's false, and I've
talk over me again. Talk over me again. Talk over me again.
Look, sir, if you want to ban abortion, even in cases of rape or not in cases of rape, that is an issue that Obama and McCain disagree on. Palin thinks that if a 12-year-old girl is raped by her father, she has to have the baby. McCain wouldn't go that far. Obama supports Roe v. Wade. They have differences on that. None of them disagree on withholding medical treatment to anyone born outside the womb. And I know you think that, but here's what I want you to do. Go to my website, radioinsidescoop.com. All you have to do, post for me any link you can find on it. I worked on that bill. I know that bill. And the answer is in the federal, I worked on the federal bill, not the Illinois bill. In the federal bill, Democrats all supported it. Republicans all supported it to the extent it didn't change current law. They voted for it. To the extent that it tried to undercut Roe v. Wade, they were against it. But it had nothing to do with the law. The law, by the way, says that any time you have a child outside the womb, you must give it medical treatment, in fact, unless a doctor feels that it would not save its life. I mean, you don't have to give medical treatment to a terminal anything. And that's the current law now. It doesn't make sense to give medical treatment to something that's going to die in 10 minutes, something like
well,
that.
My understanding, first of all, the bill that you worked on was before Barack Obama came to the Senate. So
that's true, but they repeated
so,
it. They repeated,
but my understanding of the Illinois law was that he did not support a law that would have the same requirement. That you know he
no, because the Illinois law was different from the federal law. The original Illinois law had language in it that could be seen as overturning abortions. And he wanted to protect women's right to choose. But it was already illegal under Illinois law to harm a baby that's born.
We'll agree to debate this one again because my understanding is different than your understanding, so we'll go ahead and check it out, and I look forward to a return invite.
Absolutely, because I mean, I've studied this. This is one of those things, I got to say, that pro-life advocates do precisely to confuse people, precisely to trick people. It's ridiculous. There are laws in every one of the 50 states and federal law that say that a child that's born that you have to treat like any human being.
Mark,
in every state.
Mark,
so what do? They say, let's pass an additional law, one that has zero effect on children that are actually born, but let's pass one that defines life as beginning conception so that what we'll do, it's very tricky, they'll say, if you vote for it, then you want to overturn Roe v. Wade. And if you vote against it, well, then you want to kill children, when actually the law does absolutely nothing except weaken abortion.
Let's
laws.
Talk about what Democrats do. Now, you know, I sat there and watched Chuck Schumer on television about 2 weeks ago on one of those precious Sunday talk shows that we were discussing before, and Chuck Schumer sat there and assured me in America that there were going to be 61 Democratic senators come January. Now, this is what he's predicting.
I'll be willing to
61,
disagree.
61 Democratic senators come, and yet 3 days later, I get a hysterical email from the Democratic National Committee telling me about how we have to give more money to fight John McCain because if John McCain becomes president, we're going back to back alley abortions and all this.
Well,
we
might be.
With 61 Democratic senators, we're not going anywhere, Mark. Come on.
I don't think we're going to have 61, neither do you.
So this is what Democrats do.
Listen,
you know, you're trying to scare the American people with something that doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell of happening.
Do you really think Democrats left 61? No, you don't. Neither do I.
Chuck Schumer does.
Oh, no, he doesn't.
He assured me.
That's his goal.
He assured me.
He's trying to get Democrats elected. That's his goal. I'll tell you something. We'll have, I think, at least 56.
Even if...
possibly even 57. I'd be ecstatic over 58.
Let's take 55. Is there going to be any change in federal abortion law with 55? Are we going back to back alley abortions
with 55? John McCain is elected president, he's already said he will overturn Roe v. Wade.
Well,
so, yes, he
you
will.
Know what? Single-handedly. He can just give an executive order, I suppose.
All he does is appoint the right justice. It overturns the difference. You know that.
No, and
Stevens
then it goes
is 84
then
years
it goes
old.
Back to the
Our
states.
Time is up. Thanks, Mike, for coming.